Tower Records presents A Saturday Afternoon at Altamonte Speedway.
Hey, man, thanks for stopping. Can I have a ride?
Sure. Where are you going?
Altamonte Speedway.
Oh, I didn't know they were racing today.
Well, not exactly.
That was the sound of a little violence on the stage Saturday afternoon at Altamonte when members of the Jefferson Airplane got in a little scuffle with some members of the Hells Angels. A lot went on Saturday afternoon at Altamonte Raceway, and there are probably about 300,000 or more different opinions as to what exactly did happen there. In this special, Tower Records is presenting for the next 3 or 4 hours, we're going to try and cover a few of those opinions and send them out to you and show you as much as we can about what did happen. Tower Records is the largest record store in the known world. Tower Records has more records at lower prices than you've ever seen in your entire life. They're located at the corner of Columbus and Bay in San Francisco. The hours are from 12 midnight. They're open till 12 midnight every day of the week, and that also includes Sundays. And they have specials. All the Rolling Stones albums, including Let It Bleed, are right now $2.77, and they're in stereo. The purpose of this special, it started off, what we wanted to do is we thought we had something before the concert of proportions equal to that of Woodstock, which was a truly significant as any concert has ever been. And while it didn't turn out to be another Woodstock, I don't think anybody can compare it directly to Woodstock, it has significance. But the truth of the matter is, we don't really know what's going on.
The main thing we saw all day was bad trips and freakouts. It was really heavy. I don't know if they had this much at Woodstock. A couple of medics and one doctor that was at Woodstock said that they didn't see this many bad trips. I don't know. It seemed like there was bad vibrations from the start. I sat down near the end of the evening to talk with Rock Scully, the manager of the Dead, and he had really the same impression. It was really something going on right from the start, before even Santana started.
This was a period when we liked to ascribe a lot of significance to everything we did, because so much had been happening so fast anyway. So here was a concert that had turned into a very violent rock and roll show. And our point of reference from 4 months before had been Woodstock. There was no chance at Altamont to set that ambiance that had such an impact on how people behaved. This was a speedway out in the hot valley. One day, everybody was in a hurry to get high now, get high fast, have a good time now, create Woodstock by 3 o'clock. And that's kind of the spirit that everybody was going in there with. Get out of my way, I'm going to have my Woodstock. In the following conversations, we were trying to figure out why Woodstock had gone so right and why Altamont had gone so wrong.
Hello. We have a group of people here in the studio, and we're going to talk about what happened yesterday at the Free Rolling Stones concert. At Altamonte, there was a miniature society set up of 300,000 and upwards people. It was supposedly a society of the new generation, the love generation, the brave new world, the children of the future. And as far as I can say, I don't want to live in a society like the one I saw yesterday, and we're going to discuss some of the things that we saw And then we're going to open up the phone lines and have people call and give whatever comments they have, whatever things they saw, how they felt about the concert yesterday. I mean, the lack of consideration, the total disregard for other people, and the lack of spirit, like, you know, we're one community and we got to pull this thing off, and if there's a crisis, you know, we got to work together, and that whole feeling was missing. There were times, you know, during the chaos that was around me, I was in back of the stage. There was a medical center and a place for bum trips, and people were coming through there, using it as a traffic area. And there were a lot of people lying on the ground, you know, and people trying to minister to them and talk to them, people on bad trips. And other people were just walking through the area with obviously no regard for what was going on there. And when we tried to set up barriers and keep the flow of people out of that area, nobody paid any attention. They just kept shoving their way through, you know, well, we want to get to the front of the stage, and giving excuses about, you know, well, I left my party back at the front. And I don't know, it was very, very strange. I didn't feel any sense of community with a lot of the people there. I felt like, I mean, these weren't my people.
Should we talk
for
about
Flower Children, we were almost like infants.
One of the things that may come from, and one of the things that we've been talking about, is drugs and the effect of drugs on that gathering of people, and whether you can put that many people together, let them all get stoned behind different kinds of things on purpose and accidentally, and come off with anything like an ideal human ingathering, or whether it's just going to be a very unpleasant experience like yesterday.
Yeah, I think the drugs is another, the total irresponsibility as concerns drugs, the fact that people were giving drugs in wine and in you know, in bottles, without telling people that there was
psychedelic rape.
I got to jump in here because I was at Woodstock, and all of the things you're saying went wrong about the breakdowns in lines, and about the wine and the booze and the acid and the indiscriminate use of drugs and all of that, and even the bad drugs. All those things that happened here, they happened at Woodstock too, but it was a different thing. I can't explain the difference in feeling. Coming in to this one, I felt the same way as I did at Woodstock. Coming into Woodstock, I was freaked. It was big. I was afraid. But then it got together.
Well, what made what was the difference?
That's what I'm trying to get to. And coming in to this concert last night, I had that same good feeling that I had at Woodstock when it all got together. But this one never came together. It never got together to the point of a universal kind of thing that sparked inside of everybody and said, hey, you know, let's all get behind the spirit of this festival. And the spirit of Woodstock was a getting together in the way we're talking about it. The spirit of Altamonte, I guess we're going to have to learn to pronounce it because it's going to be around
Altamont
a while.
Too.
Altamont was... You know, the hell with you, brother. You know?
It I want to see the stones.
The spirit of Altamont was, you know, I don't give a damn whether you've got a ride home or not, you know? I don't give a damn whether you're on a bum trip or not. I'm on my trip. You're on yours.
There's a lot of talk about where the blame should be for this concert being so bad. Maybe it's because they didn't have a chance to do the stage right. Maybe it's because they didn't have a chance to think out crowd control. You can go over anything and find something to beat yourself up over. I think basically everybody involved in that did the best they could with what they had, and it was sucky. It was terrible. And I think there was an awful lot of naivete that got shattered that day. Now, what you'll hear in these conversations are our attempts to try and figure out our own involvement and maybe our own blame for the situation.
Okay, hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I was right on the side of the stage, and I just sort of like to report specific things. I saw about 5 fist fights. A friend of ours was walking with us, and he took a picture of an angel, and the angel grabbed his camera and ripped out all the film. A friend of mine stepped on an angel's hand, and the angel threatened to kill him or something. And these things were going on, and we were wondering why the angels were like the guards on stage. It was very frightening, and I think whoever put them on stage as guards like it was a very irresponsible act. Like we were all in terror of them, you know, like I was going to criticize them. And everybody hushed me up because they were afraid that they would be beaten.
Right.
And, you know, just in the small area that I was in, like, I saw so many fights. I saw a girl dragged across the stage by her hair. There was a girl hit by a bottle. And then in general, like, there was no feeling toward people on bad acid trips. There was a girl beneath my feet who was getting kicked and walked on, and people wouldn't help her. And I had to, try to help her out of the crowd with another girl. And then people around me said, oh, you should have left her alone because she would have worked out her trip, you know.
Right.
And in general, it was very frightening. And I think I think that the angels were primarily responsible for the violence because out of the five fights I saw, like, an angel was involved in every one of them.
You know, we used to do a lot of talking, and I think everybody...
Thanks for your call, by the way.
Everybody has the problem of fitting this into his own experience, but I remember all the stories where you read that eight people on the bus and didn't do anything while a couple of kids beat up an old lady or some outrageous
Kitty
story
Genovese
like that.
Stories, right?
Kitty Genovese's, where X number of people witnessed a murder and didn't call the police. Yesterday, a lot of us did that. Really, a lot of us, and I did too, and I think that maybe a lot of people come to some understanding about why that happens and what the dynamic of it is.
How do you confront the Hell's Angels?
Well, how do you confront eight little kids with knives and I mean, you know, how do you do it in any circumstances? There were enough people there to confront the Hell's Angels, and I didn't do it either, but...
You see, by confronting the Hell's Angels, you're condoning their violent trip. You know, the only way you can confront them, at least in that situation, was through violence, a power trip. People tried to talk to them, the airplane, and most of the groups, even Mick Jagger, tried to talk to them, and that just did not work.
Speak out against the madness. We got to ask you, please, absolutely no profanity, and Scoop is fielding the calls. Hello, you're on KSAN.
Hi, you were talking earlier about the difference between what was happening at the festival yesterday and at Woodstock. I was also at Woodstock and got there on Sunday afternoon, you know, when the people who had been there the whole weekend had gone through the mud and the rain and everything, and there was a difference. And the one thing that I attributed to, not the only thing, but one thing, was the fact that of the way that the stage had been constructed, and that at Woodstock it was elevated, you know, to such a degree that you wouldn't even consider trying to rush it. And so the people sat back and they just enjoyed it. Everybody could see and everybody could hear. But the idea of trying to, construct a stage such as the ones they had yesterday, one that wasn't off the ground that far, you know, naturally people were going to try and get up as close as they could. They wanted to touch Mick Jagger. They wanted to get as close as they could to Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young. And, you know, so from the very beginning, people were, like, smashed up against there. And then finally when the Stones did come on, I was off the stage to the side in one of the equipment vans, and the look of just pain and exasperation on the people's face who were, you know, being crushed, being smashed right up against the stage.
Well, I think maybe you're raising a good question here.
Did the people have a good time? Did you have a good time?
Well, I did because I was in a pretty safe place. I was off the stage in one of the equipment vans, but... In relation to what happened yesterday in Woodstock, like when I got there at Woodstock on Sunday, I walked from the front instead of coming from the back. I walked from the front and found a place about 20 yards away from the stage. And nobody was hostile. I mean, they were passing food out, you know, and people were making place for those who would come late. But I think if anybody had tried to do that yesterday, they probably would have been smashed to the ground. There was just so much tension and hostility. It was just a different thing.
Okay, thanks very much for your call.
Yeah. What about this idea of, you know, well, we have to see the Stones, we have to get as close as we can to see the Stones. The whole idea of superstars and, you know, the total madness in trying to get as close as possible to these superstars. And if we, as a culture, as a subculture, consider ourselves different from the... other so-called Hollywood culture, maybe we aren't so different. Maybe it just takes different forms, different styles.
We have stars. What's the difference between Mick Jagger and Judy Garland?
Right, huh? We have stars.
Yeah.
The Rolling Stones always kept it simple. They had a very, I think, very wry way of dealing with just the purest essence of rock. And I think in that way, they took it to a new high without complicating it.
Earlier, before we went on with this special, I called up John Burks, editor of the Rolling Stone, and
managing editor.
Jan Winter is the managing editor, right?
No, he's the editor and publisher.
Oh, I never get that quite straight. But anyway, John Burks is a Rolling Stone heavy magazine, not group. And here's that conversation.
I tried disengaging myself from all the rest of it, just listening to the Stones as a band performing. And God damn, they're fine. You know,
they really did get it.
Fine, and that, and beyond that, it's just it is just as great a rock and roll band as the finest thing anybody ever said about them. That was a good thing, you know. That part of it is good. I don't know. Let's do this Socratically, man. What do you think people went there for?
I don't know, man. Let me interview you, okay?
You can ask me, and I can say I'm not sure. It was a free chance to hear the Rolling Stones, you know?
Yeah. Well, then who are the Stones and what are their image probably might be the next question, huh?
Yeah, right.
And do you think their image is a speedway full of wrecked cars?
Well, I don't know. You know, the thing that was... there are things that are good about it, but they're just good in an entirely personal kind of sense of things. Like, I'm glad I was there, you know?
Well, why, John?
Well, to have seen it. I mean, I'm glad to have gone to Fellini movies, right?
Right.
Not that I enjoyed them. I was glad to have seen Weekend, but I can say that all through the whole of Weekend, you know, Godard bored the hell out of me. And that there were a few moments here and there that were delightful of themselves as a moment, but as a whole, the whole movie is like really boring and repetitive and even corny and a lot of stupid visual puns and all this stuff, you know. But still, after that whole experience is over, on a personal basis, it was it opened your eyes to a lot of things, you know, and those things are worthwhile.
What sort of things?
Well, let's. To go back a little, what kind of a band are the Rolling Stones? They're not, for all the talk that people put out about the message of rock and roll and what it stands for and all that, still every band, every performer does it a different way. And I think that with the Stones, the thing that they deal with is man's basic sexuality, man's proclivities toward violence, that man digs violence, all that kind of thing, you know. And it's like by pronouncing it, by saying it right out, by not hiding anything, you become aware a little better, maybe, of who you are and what you're about.
Please allow me to introduce myself. I'm a man of wealth and taste.
The news media at that time, I think, was a lot less sophisticated than it is nowadays. And I don't think the mainstream news media of the Chronicle and the Examiner fully understood. They were writing typical hippie, Okie from Muskogee kind of stories in those days still. And when those of us who were in that hip culture saw that stuff, it was just so clearly out of touch that we didn't take it very seriously. That's why we had our own alternative media, which was even harder to take seriously sometimes, but at least it was ours. The next day, the story in the Chronicle was like a cookie-cutter Woodstock story, because it really didn't capture the essence of what was going on. It didn't sound like anybody had really gone there. And we were kind of used to that. That's part of why we were getting our radio station in there with a phone line, was to try and get the information out, because we saw ourselves as a media. Fancy that.
Hello, this is KSAN, and you're on the air.
A lot of things have been said already negatively, and that was my feeling of the whole thing. But what I wanted to know was, I wanted to propose the question of, what about the media?
Good question.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
We got a four-square round of applause here, brother. Did anybody see the Examiner this morning?
Yeah, the Examiner, of all people treated it.
We haven't let this guy make his point yet.
Right. Now, first of all, the Examiner mentioned the fact that there was a death, mentioned the fact that babies were born, but didn't seem to be at all appalled by that fact. The L.A. Times didn't mention there was a death.
There have been five, I believe.
All right, five now. What I want to know is, why not? Maybe they were so distant from the front that they couldn't see what was going on. I noticed that, some of the other stations had their news trucks all the way in the back on the hills. Now, maybe it's the idea that, they've been knocking what's been going on and getting a lot of negative feedback. Now, maybe, they're trying to be one of the beautiful people, you see, and they're ignoring some of these facts, or the facts that they didn't see, and what's going to press is sort of a, well, it's not saying what was there. Maybe they're trying to be in with it. Maybe they're trying to be cool, and they missed what really happened.
I think they've been missing it for a long time, brother. I think, I think that story was written before. I think that story was like a format story. It was like the ones that appeared in Woodstock after the Woodstock Festival. Not the first day after the Woodstock Festival, but the third or fourth day after the festival, the truth about Woodstock started to appear in the paper, and the truth stories about Woodstock is what this cat was writing this morning. And it was like, just pull out Woodstock and insert Altamonte in the story that this guy wrote. That's what it was like, and I'm sure the person that wrote that story wasn't at Woodstock, so thanks a lot for your point.
What we learned in this broadcast was pretty much startling, that these guys, the Angels, had been hired and paid with $500 of beer on a truck with ice to essentially bring in the Stones and keep people off the stage. That was the understanding. That was the deal. And it seemed like there was not a lot of disagreement over that. That seemed to emerge as a fact, because it became rather apparent that the Stones didn't know what kind of people they were dealing with. And I think their point of reference was, as Emmett Grogan points out in this program, based on what they saw in London, which has a whole different kind of Hell's Angel.
Finally got one of the Angels on the line.
No chance.
Hello, K-San, and you're on the air, brother.
Hi, this is Pete from the Hell's Angels, San Francisco.
Good to hear from you, man. What's up?
Okay, here's what's going on. I can't tell you exactly what happened on the stage, but I can tell you about beforehand. Now, what had happened about 2 weeks ago, Sam Cutler, the Rolling Stones, came here and said they were a little nervous about the crowd, and they had a little trouble in Florida and so on. And what they did was they asked us would we come and keep the people off the stage. They didn't want nobody grabbing the microphones, and because they had a problem. And they were spiking at drinks over in Oakland and on by a security thing. So we went into that security. But, he was a sincere fella. And what happened was, it's on TV right now, too.
You keep fading out, man. Are you staying real close to the phone?
Kind of, yeah. I'm watching TV. It's on TV, too. So what happened is they offered us $500 worth of beer. Go there, take care of the stage. So we went to there, and we were taking care of the stage. At first, it was a little hectic, but we all settled in. And the next, pretty much the next thing that happened was this: this guy was waving a gun, and he was taking care of it. I'm sorry that what happened, but
do you really know what happened there, man?
I was in the back dancing, see, and I wasn't paying attention to the front. See, I more or less know what happened beforehand, why we were there doing what we were doing.
Right.
Can I ask something? How about Marty Balin? He wasn't waving a gun, and he gets jumped on stage.
Listen, there's a lot of people that get it because they're looking for it. You know, I don't know. I don't understand. I can't explain, isolate your one thing for you. But I know that a lot of people got passes yesterday, and I thought it went pretty good. I'm sorry about that one thing.
The impression of a lot of people were that some of your brothers got out of control. Why and what can be done?
I don't think they were that much out of control. They were doing their thing. We took this $500 worth of beer to do it, to watch the... Yeah, we took them from the tent there. We took them from the heliport. They asked us to do this thing.
Hmm. Did they give you any idea of how to go about it, man? What kind of instructions did you get from Cutler and the other people with the stones and putting it together?
They said that we'd take care of it, and we did.
Just keep them away, and it doesn't matter how you do it, right?
They didn't say nothing to us about any of that.
When Sam Cutler asked some of the Hells Angels to stand behind the speakers and get off the stage, why didn't they heed that? I mean, he was asking them, you know, very calmly and nicely.
Most of the people that I seen when I was watching, I was busy, I was having a good time. But most of the people were moving back, taking care of it, you know, in the beginning. I remember I got a little frantic for a couple of minutes, but it eased off during the day. And that's how I seen it.
I think there was a period when it was pretty easy, like when the Burrito Brothers were on. You feel that same way?
Yeah, it seemed fine then. I was standing on top of the bus then. I was just looking. Everything seemed fine. It was one little scuffle by the stage there. I wasn't there to really be in close enough to see what went down. But
I have to kind of keep re-asking the question, and maybe you can provide for other people some insights. Now, I think I got a little bit of understanding as to the way you deal with people and why and everything. I think a lot of people don't. And a lot of the calls we got tonight are saying, hey, man, you didn't have to be so rough. Uh-huh. What about it?
Rough?
Well, what I feel about the roughness is if we say we're going to do something, we do it. You understand? That's our whole thing.
I understand that, yeah.
If these people asked us to do this thing, we did it. I didn't feel like... what are we supposed to... We're not cops. We're not into that thing. When people ask us to do something, if we decide to do it, it's done. No matter what, how far we have to go to do it. I don't mean on any kind of... I don't know about this guy. Like I said, I didn't see that come down. I don't know what happened there.
Hmm. Pete, you don't feel badly about it?
Excuse me, I didn't hear you.
You don't feel badly about it?
I feel very badly.
Oh, okay.
I really do. I'm sorry it happened. I feel like there were 6 bullets in that gun, and 6 people could have immediately been killed.
Do you have any idea why that gun was drawn?
I don't know why that gun was drawn. I was in the back of the stage dancing.
Yeah.
That's where I was at, so I didn't see that at all. In fact, I didn't know about it until today.
Uh-huh.
That's when I heard about it. Most of the thing I know about was beforehand and the setup for it. They've been over here about 3 or 4 times in the last 2 weeks talking about us coming. We were throwing it off the bus to people. It was, to me, a very enjoyable day, good sunshiny day.
The original idea of Altamont was to have it at Golden Gate Park. My first contact was with Sam Cutler, who came around the radio station and told me about it. He told me about some of the difficulties and going through some of the things with the city, and I was in several of those meetings when it was announced that the deal with Sears Point couldn't happen. We were on the edge of canceling the whole thing, but I remember the feeling, too, of, gee, we're so close, we've got everybody committed, we want to make this happen. Cutler was a driving force. He spoke for the Stones all the way through this thing. In meetings with the Grateful Dead and with other people, he was the voice of the Rolling Stones. He was what they wanted, what they didn't want.
This tape was... when Sam called in earlier, he was out there trying to do the cleanup, trying to organize volunteers to help clean up the scene at Altamonte earlier this afternoon. And I'd been trying to get to him, and I thought he flew back with the Stones last night to L.A. and then out to England this afternoon, which is what I understand they did. But apparently he, being the road manager, had to stay and do a lot of dirty work, too. So this tape is a little interesting, and we'll play that right now.
The problem as of this particular moment is that of the maybe 400,000 people who were here yesterday, only 15 remain to help clear up the mess. I'd like to ask you, your radio station, to broadcast the most urgent appeal for volunteers to come here, only those people of their own transport to come here as soon as possible and help us to dismantle all the stage, all the scaffolding towers, tents, trailers and things like that, and then on top of that to help us start to clear up about 30 tons of litter, which the very pleasant and beautiful people of San Francisco happen to leave here.
Okay, I'm sure we can get a lot of people out there. And
I hope so, because in fact, rather than turn this place into a beautiful place, we've turned it into a pigsty.
Really looks awful, huh?
Something about it is terrible.
Yeah. Okay, how does this thing stack up with a lot of the others you've been on, in terms of the violence that went down at this one? It seems like there was much more violence and bad acid trips at this one than any big concerts we've had in quite a long time. And I was wondering, how you felt about it.
Well, number one is that violence and bad acid trips aren't necessarily connected, but to deal with the violence first, the concert did not turn out, as far as I personally am concerned, did not, in an overall sense, turn out as I would have liked. I think there are a number of contributory factors to that, not least of which would, of course, be the fact that a lot of people were taking bad acid. That's number one. I personally feel that the violence, such as it was, and a small minority of the people who were here were involved in that violence. The violence, such as it was regrettable and unfortunate. I think there are a number of factors that contributed to it, not least of which was that we had to get this thing together in very short time. A lot of the people who were here who could have held down the kind of situations that did evolve.
Well, had you had the time to just erect security around the stage, even probably would have made it a lot easier.
I beg your pardon?
Had you the time to just erect the proper security fences around the stage and things?
We had no time to do it.
Yeah, it might have been easier.
I'm sure, but we had to trust people. We trusted people, and I think that trust was good enough. We trusted them to erect the site and get it together in time, and they did it. We're now trusting them to come out here and clear it up.
How about the Hells Angels, Sam? Do you, How about their presence? How do you feel about it?
I myself feel that the Hells Angels were as helpful as they saw that they could be in a situation which most people found very confusing, including the Hells Angels. Everybody found last night very confusing, so everybody acted on their own initiative. If you want to ask me what the Hells Angels were doing last night, then I'm not qualified to speak for the Hells Angels. You must ask your Hells Angels yourself.
Well, what I'm speaking to is, and I'm sure you saw, because you were right on the stage, the way they treated various incidents of people standing up and so forth. And what do you think about that? I understand that even the members of the airplane were roughed up a little bit.
Right. If you're asking me to issue a general put-down of the Angels, which I imagine a lot of people would only be too happy to do, then I'm not prepared to do that.
Well,
the Angels did as they saw best in the difficult situation, as I have said before. Now, 50% of the people will dig what they did, and 50% of the people might not dig what they did. I don't need to get into a kind of positive anti thing. As far as I'm concerned, they were people who were here who tried to help in their own way, right? Now, man, if people didn't dig it, I'm sorry. I didn't dig, in fact, what a lot of people did yesterday. I don't dig the fact that I'm now here and, like a lot of other people are here, left holding the baby, mm-hmm. Right?
Do you have any comment from Mick, or did you hear any comment from Mick afterwards?
Yeah, Mick has got a comment. Number one is that Mick was very, very pleased with the people who managed to get it together in such a short time, and he would like to thank them, thank all the volunteers who came. He needs to name no one by name, because all of the people who were involved know who they are. That's number one. Number two is he'd like to thank everybody at the concert who came for all of their efforts, right? Okay. All of the efforts that came off, all of the efforts that didn't quite come off, and all of the efforts even that were wrong efforts. Everything that happened, he'd like to thank people for making it happen. Right. What I'm sure he'd like to do now, if he could see the situation here, was beg people personally in his own name to come out and make sure that this place is returned to nature.
Sonny Barger was the head of the Oakland Hells Angels chapter. It sounded very much like Sonny was calling and spewing and probably loaded when he called. We couldn't interrupt him to save our lives, and that's pretty evident in the program. I think several of us tried to butt in and get questions to him, and he just kept going on his rant. It was self-serving, no question, but it was also illuminating. I mean, here was a first-hand explanation of what the bike means to the biker. You know, how this is my life and you don't touch it. You know, you can have my woman, you can have my dog, but leave my bike alone.
And here is Sonny Bodger. Have I got it right, Sonny?
Yeah.
Okay, what's up?
Yeah, well, you know, I can't tell you what happened before, you know, like 4 o'clock, because we had an officers' meeting and we stayed behind. And we got there about 4 o'clock. And, like, we were told by one of the clubs that, like, if we showed up down there, we could sit on the stage and drink some beer and this and that, and that the Stones manager or somebody had bought us. Like, and I don't know who any of these people are that are running the Stones or any of them people, because, you know, that's not my thing, knowing them people, you know. But we were told by members of the Angels that had talked with them that, you know, if we showed up down there, we could drink some beer and sit on the stage, you know, and just, like, keep people off of the stage, you know. And, like, I'm bum-kicked about the whole thing. I don't like what happened there, you know, on the whole show. But when we got there, we come in about 4 o'clock. We were told that we would park in front of the stage, you know. And when we come in, like, we were sort of lost up in there, and we started coming down, and we sort of run into where, like, the place was packed, man, and we'd seen, you know, the stage, and we couldn't get down. Well, we come through, and, like, the people there were out of sight, man. They just stood up and moved their sleeping bags and everything and stepped out of the way and done everything really neat to let us through. And we must have passed, I would say, like, the 14 or 15 so officers that come in at 4 o'clock or approximately there, like, had to pass, you know, at close to a few thousand people.
You drove down on your bike, Sonny?
Yeah, we come down on our bikes because we were told that we were supposed to park in front of the stage. And so, like, when we started coming down through the crowd, everybody, you know, just out of sight, got up and moved. We come down in low gear, you know, like, didn't try to run into anybody or do any of that kind of thing. Everybody got up really nice. Some people offered us drinks on the way by. And, like, we must come in, like, approximate contact with at least 1,000 people. And out of them 1,000 people, we had trouble with one person. One broad jumped up and said something that pertained to a four-letter word, them Angels. And, you know, one of the Angels stopped his bike, and he had his old lady on the back, and he said, "Are you going to let them talk about Angels like that?" And she jumped off the bike and smacked the other broad that said that was in the crowd, got back on the bike, and we proceeded down. No problem. We pulled up in front of the stage and parked where we were told we were supposed to park. And
were you given any instructions as to how to keep order around the stage?
Well, this is what we were told. We were, like, supposed to sit on the edge of the stage and keep people off, and, you know, like, a little bit back if we could, you know? And what happened was when we got down there, we parked our bikes mostly a little bit to the side of the stage, you know, so, like, the people that were there, you know, like, didn't have to, you know, back up too far away from the stage. But one bike got sort of parked directly in front of the stage. And anyways, as I got there, I pulled up and parked, and a couple of my guys that were already there, you know, started yelling, "Hey, Chief," you know. And then this guy, I don't know what he is, but he's something with the Stones. He's a heavy-set sort of guy, wore a tan-colored jacket with long, wide sideburns, come over and said, "Oh, hey, Sonny," you know. I said, "Yeah," and he introduced himself, and I don't remember his name. But he had something to do with the Stones. He said, "Could you come back here for a second?" And this was an intermission, you know. And I said, "Yeah." So I walked back there with him, and we walked back to some tent. And he said, "The Stones are in here, you know, like, tuning." And, like, we had come down. It took us, you know, maybe 15 minutes to come through the crowd. you know, because we were coming in low gear, slow, more or less walking the bikes, you know. We were on them, but like walking them, you know, keep from falling over because we weren't going fast enough for them to balance. And I said, well, he says, we would like to have six angels along with these security guards, which were, you know, they had a couple of uniformed security guards, but they had mucho security guards with little white buttons on, which they explained to us that, like, these are security guards, you know, with these little white buttons that were in civilian clothes. And he says, if we could have six angels with them, we could clear a path up here, you know, just to walk with them up to the stage. And so one of my guys was there with me, and I told him, why don't you go get six guys? They come back with a various assortment of angels from different clubs. And so, like, I went back up to the stage. But before I went, I told him, hey, like, let's get these cats up there, man. Everybody wants to hear music, you know. And I don't know anything that happened, you know, like, before that, because I wasn't there. But, I, you know, I tried to impress on them that they wanted to hear music. And so I went back up on the stage, and there's this cat running around on the stage, like, pretty frantic with sort of a burgundy-colored leather coat on and long hair and long sideburns and talked with an English accent.
That was Sam Cutler.
Sam Cutler, yeah, it could be. I don't know his name. I got introduced to him, too, and I forgot it before they said it. But anyways, this cat's sort of going, you know, a little bit, you know, he's hysterical, I would say. Like, he don't know what to do, and, like, there's a lot of people on the stage besides angels, you know. And he's blowing it, you know, and he's saying, you know, like, to us, get these cats off the stage. Get these cats off the stage. The Stones won't come out. And I told him, hey, they ain't going to come out for a half hour anyway. They're back there tuning, man. You know, like, I couldn't understand, you know, personally, because I was there to sit on the stage and listen to them and drink this beer that we were promised, you know, for sitting on the stage, you know. Like, you know, I didn't go there to fight. You know, I just went there to have a good time and sit on the stage. If they think I sit on the stage, you know, well, you know what? I'm in the way, you know, so maybe somebody ain't going to climb up on the stage.
Hey, Sonny, could I ask you a question?
Let me finish what...
I'm sorry.
Then you can ask me anything you want.
Beautiful.
Anyways, finally the Stones come out and they start playing. And, you know, like, everything's going, everybody's having a real good time. And all of a sudden, somebody down in front, where this one bike right directly in front was, is yelling, you know. So I myself jumped down there, and the wiring had shorted out somewhere, and the bike had caught fire. And I pulled the wires off of the bike, off of the battery, and the bike was in flames in, you know, a couple of places. And, like, we was trying to put it out, and, like, the people were packed right up and onto the stage, you know. And, like, I kept telling them, back up a little bit so we can get this fire out. And, like, nobody would back up. And, like, you know, some other people, some other angels that were sitting on the stage, like, finally caught the action of what was happening, and they started coming off of the stage. Well, when they did, people started backing up, you know. Now, I ain't saying anything about no angel hit anybody, you know. You know, I know some of them hit people, you know, but they moved them people back out of the way of the bike, and we got the fire put out on the bike, and in the process, you know what, some people got hit. And you know what, some of them people, like, maybe were them Friday nighters that got that front row, I don't know, but, like, they didn't want to give up that spot even to put the bike out, to let us put the fire out, and they come back fighting, you know?
Yeah.
When they come back fighting, they got thumped, you know? And a lot of times, there was six or seven angels on one guy, and a lot of times there wasn't in different areas. But then after that happened, we got the fire put out on the bike, everybody got back up on the stage of the angels, and the people moved right back in again, and everything was cool. But out of all them people in that front area, which maybe for 25 rows back, you would say, I don't know how many you could even estimate at it, there was three or four people in there that come over to where the bikes were and kicked a couple of bikes over and, you know, broke a couple of mirrors off of a couple of them and just and that. Well, you know what? I don't know if you think we pay $50 for them things or steal them or pay a lot for them or what, but most people that's got a good Harley chopper got a few grand invested in it.
I can dig it.
Ain't nobody going to kick my motorcycle. And they might think because they're in a crowd of 300,000 people that they can do it and get away with it. But when you're standing there looking at something that's your life, and everything you got is invested in that thing, and you love that thing better than you love anything in the world, and you see a guy kick it, you know who he is. And
right.
If you have to go through 50 people to get to him, you're going to get him. And you know what? They got. And after they got it, then some other people started yelling. And you know what? Some of them people was loaded on some drugs that it's just too bad we wasn't loaded on, because they come every once in a while, one of them or two of them or three of them would come running off of a hill yelling, ah, you know, and jump on somebody, and it wasn't even always jumping on angels. They were jumping on anybody that was in their way,
right.
The other people there and this and that. But when they jumped on an angel, they got hurt, you know?
You know,
and,
Sonny?
So it went on and on like that. But, you know, like, we moved them people to save that bike. And then after that, they started trying to destroy our bikes, and we're not going to stand for it, and then that made it personal.
Right, it really did. You know, that's not a nice thing
Sonny.
To do.
Like, we tried, like, he's talking about that Mick Jagger had the people sit down. Well, you know what? You grab old Mick Jagger and ask him who told him to tell the people to sit down.
That's what I
told him to tell the people to sit down. And if anybody was there in the front rows can remember me walking over and telling them, you know what, if you tell these people to sit down and be cool, the people in the back can see a little bit, and this show will get on, and we can get it going. And he done it. And also in the process of it, there was one girl, if you remember, that was quite a large girl that was going around topless and kept trying to climb up on the stage. And, like, this Mick Jagger, like, he used us for dupes, man. You know,
right.
And as far as I'm concerned, we were the biggest suckers for that idiot that I can ever see.
That's what I want to talk about,
While Sonny. We were doing this, like, this broad keeps climbing up on the stage, and, like, Mick Jagger's in some kind of a panic and everything. And we got five guys there, like, he's telling us, don't hurt anybody, try not to hurt anybody, don't fight. We got five guys there trying to keep her down without hurting her. And they got people down there in the audience trying to put her up. And, like, he gets on this big trip about, hey, you know what, man, you don't need five men to handle one girl. Well, you know what, that got big cheers because a lot of people were upset because we were thumping people, but they didn't see what them people that were getting thumped were doing to our bikes, you know, for righteously no reason. And, you know, like, I got hot. Well, he said, don't hurt people. Well, you know what? You can ask anybody. You know what? Any one guy could have handled that girl. He could have just knocked her out. And we was trying to do like he asked and not hurt anybody. And we was trying to get four or five people to get that girl off of the stage without hurting her. And the people down below were trying to put her up on the stage. Well, you know what? When that happened, everybody backed out of the way, and somebody knocked her off of the stage, man, and there was no more problem. One guy took care of it, and a little bit more violence, you know? Well, you know what? I'm a violent cat when I gotta be, but I don't really want to be. But there ain't nobody gonna take anything I got and try to destroy it. And, you know, like, at one time, when some hassling was going on, the people were getting up on the stage, and speakers in front of the stage, people were climbing on them, and they were getting disconnected, and nobody could hear them, and they weren't working, and they asked us to please move the people off of there, and we're up in front, and there ain't even no fighting going on at this time. We're just telling the people to get off and backing them up, and the people that got there Friday night that were sitting on these speakers, they're upset, and they're yelling and carrying on, and they don't want to get off. And Mick Jagger, again, like, put it all on the angels, man. Like, if this don't cease, we're going to quit. He says, there's too much violence here. You guys are doing unnecessary things and this and that and everything, you know? And, you know, like, there wasn't even no violence going on at the time. We were doing what one of them managers asked us to do, as getting them people off of them speakers so they could get people down there and plugging them back in and getting them working again and everything. And that's what we was doing. And then this cat comes along and says, they're going to quit if we don't stop.
Do you think it was worth...
Well, you know, later...
speaking to here.
I ain't no cop, I ain't never going to ever pretend to be a cop. And you know what? I didn't go there to police nothing, man. They told me if I could sit on the edge of the stage so nobody would climb over me, you know, I could drink beer until the show was over. And that's what I went there to do. But you know what? Some cat throws something and bangs my bike, or some cat kicks my bike over, he got a fight. And you know what? You can say anything you want, and you can call them people flower children and this and that, and there was 300,000 people there approximately, or whatever they say, and I'll guarantee you that the largest majority of them were there to have a good time and have a good ball and listen to the people sing and do this and that. But you know what? There was a couple thousand of them there that was there looking for trouble.
Right. Sonny, what, you know, like, just about that question.
We were there looking for a good time, but you know what? Everywhere we go, we're looking for a good time. But if somebody wants trouble with us, they're going to get it. We don't want to hurt them people. And you know what? They don't want to be hurt. But there is some of them lousy people, and you can call us lousy people just the same way back. I don't care. I've been called everything you can be called by experts. But some of them people out there ain't a bit better than what some of the people think of the worst of us, man. And it's about time they realized it. And they can call in and call us all kind of lousy dogs, and like we shouldn't be at these places and this and that, but you know what? When they started messing over our bikes, they started it.
Sonny, you got it right there, man. You got it by, you know, by letting people know exactly where you're at, and people should have known.
I am not no peace creep by any sense of the word, but you know what, man? If a cat don't want to fight with me and don't want to hassle with me, you know what? I want to be his friend. If he don't want to be my friend, then out of sight, don't even talk to me. But if he don't want to be my friend and he's going to get in my face, I'm going to hurt him or he's going to hurt me. And you know what? It really doesn't matter if he hurts me, because I've been hurt before. And you know what? I've been hurt by experts. But I, over the years, have learned how to get up and do it again.
Okay, thanks a lot, man. I think you've done a lot to enlighten a lot of people as to, you know, as to just what was going on.
The concert was to have been free. It was to have been at another place in Marin County, and it was all moved at the last minute. People started building on it late the night before, the day before, and by midnight of the day of the concert, it was all over.
Jim Marshall's probably done a bit of more rock concerts from the same viewpoint in the last 3-4 years. Than a lot of other people who are around as a photographer, and he's got some of the top credits in as a photographer. Jim, what are your impressions of the whole thing that went down at the Stones concert?
Well, I think, first off, it was like a bum trip from the beginning, and everyone I've talked to has felt the same way.
Why?
I think a lack of planning, but first, let's say a few good things about it, man. I think that, name names, man, you know, this is where it's at. I think that Chipmunk and the people that worked with him, man, did almost an impossible job of getting that thing together. They worked very, very hard and did almost, you know, like I say, an impossible job. And those people, I think, really tried to do a tremendous job. I think that the trouble that was there was a lack of planning, a lack of security, even though it was supposed to be a free festival. It was a lot of very uptight situations, again, bordering around the stage. Like at Woodstock, the only hassles were around the stage, you know, people wanting to get in and get in vantage points and stuff and all kinds of jive kind of press credentials and everything. And I got involved working there trying to help, you know, the people running it with some of the photography thing, you know, and I ended up not even taking the normal amount of pictures that I do because trying to help. But that was the only hassle at Woodstock. There was no out-and-out violence, man. Not that I know of. There may have been maybe a little shoving here and there, and 300,000, 400,000 people, it can't be helped. But there wasn't what was here. I think there was more violence at this, what do you call, freak show that we had over at that stock car track, Altamont, than all the other festivals this year combined, almost. Sam Cutler, and only Sam Cutler, was responsible for telling them, man, like, you know, try to cool it, but do what you have to do, you know. And it got even more insane, you know. And I think that the only band, well, Santana started the thing, and they were a little uptight about the way the security was, and that, not for themselves, man, but it was a drag to try to play for people with all this things happening, and they tried to cool it. Then I think the Airplane played, and the Airplane of all, you know, was the only band that I felt, again, this is a very personal observation, was really concerned about what was happening there. They stopped a couple of times when, you know, the angels in the doing their job, you know, were roughing people up pretty bad, busting people up and everything. The airplane stopped, and Marty Balin said something, and he got smashed in the mouth.
Florence, who smashed Marty?
One of the angels did, man. You know, for what reason, I don't know, except that I think Marty told him to get off the stage or to cool it. Then Paul Kantner got to the microphone and said something, and one of the angels advanced on Paul Kantner, man, and then someone stepped in and cooled that, or I think Paul would have been, you know, really hit.
How about the incident with the stabbing? Did you see much of that, any of that?
All I know about that is that I heard, you know, I saw it maybe 30 seconds after it started. Bob Cohen saw someone with a gun, a black guy with a gun. There's a tramp sitting on my
doorstep. Emmett Grogan was one of the original diggers that had started the Haight-Ashbury in the days before the media arrived, when the free store and the free clinic. He was one of the visionaries that had a big handle in what really evolved into the Haight-Ashbury. Emmett, through being involved with virtually every faction in the city, was also well acquainted with who in the Hell's Angels there was to talk with and how to make a deal with them, and to some extent probably helped guide Sam Cutler into these contacts.
Emmett Grogan was on the line and had a lot to do with organizing a lot of free concerts around the area. Emmett, you here all right?
I can hear.
What have you got to say?
Well, he talked to Mick Jagger in L.A. about 9 weeks ago. And originally, he asked me and a few other people to try to arrange a free concert or show, rock and roll show, at Chino, the prison. It turned out to be impossible because of their drug bust, you know. The authorities at Chino didn't want them. And then we talked again. After we put on a thing at the Atascadero State Hospital for the criminally insane. And he heard about that, and he said, what should we do? And I said, well, why don't you allow the people of San Francisco to throw a gigantic party, sort of covering the whole Golden Gate Park, not just the polo field, but the whole goddamn park, with stages all over the park, and just come on one of the stages like any other band, you know. And this way there'll be no, you know, concentration of people and no, you know, madness and that. Okay. But he agreed. And we made a whole list of artists, from Dr. John the Night Tripper to Fred Neil to all these people, right? And here's where it went bad. The New York office. That's Alan Klein, some guy named Schneider.
Ron Schneider.
Ron Schneider, right. And a fellow named John James. I said the only problem to Jagger would be getting the permits for the park, because they put a ban on music since, you know, an incident happened during the summer. And Ron Schneider and John James jumped up and said, they work for Alan Klein. They said, oh, we have no problem getting permits, we'll get them in 2 days. So I said, can I expect them in 2 days? They said, yes, we'll get them to you in 2 days. Call us at this number in New York in 2 days. I want to speak to us, or Alan Klein, I dare speak to him. And I said, fine. So I came back to San Francisco, and I went around the whole city. And I spoke to all kinds of people in all kinds of groups, from La Raza to the black people to everybody. But this was going to be the coming together of everybody in the streets, man. You know?
Right.
Going to do their thing. It wasn't going to be, you know, they were going to do their thing for people who don't know what their thing is. You know? But it always going to pertain to music. Music and dancing. Understand?
Got it.
Okay. Well, what happened was they strung us out on the site. I called them in 2 days. Oh, we're having a little, you know, we have some trouble here. We'll take care of that, you know, within the week. Finally, I go, we'll call you, don't call us. I said, fine, okay, we'll forget it. And the people were by then, they were pissed off because they couldn't get, you know, to the sites to construct their things. You know, and they couldn't, you know, design their things for the site. Even the Art Institute and, oh, just a phenomenal amount of people. There's about 25 groups here. besides all the bands in the city wanted to come in trucks and play all over the park, you know, the whole park. You know, okay. So finally, Jagger was crazy, and he was angry with Rammstein and those people, and he demanded that they get, you know, down to business. So they came through through some kind of connections in Aliotto's office. They couldn't get a permit for the park, right? That's how heavy they were, right? They couldn't get a permit for the park. But what they did, they got sites that were owned by Bank of America, some insurance company, and some private guy with a heavy Italian sounding Italian name. Okay. But these places were just, you know, too... They weren't big enough, you know, for those amount of people. So finally, through some contacts, we got a hold of Sears Point, right, Raceway. And the people, the president of Sears Point Racetrack and the vice president and all the people there said, fine, we'd love to have you, and they were very enthusiastic about it, etc. Until their bosses heard about it. The people who own Sears Point are called Filmways. It's run by a guy named Marty Ranzerhoff, and his vice president there is a guy named Richard St. John. Mm. As soon as they saw that the Stones were going to put on a free concert, well, a party, actually, we still had the party in mind because it was time for the party. We had a week to construct a party. We had our own poster makers about to make posters, and the whole thing, everybody was ready to go. Elaine Brown from the Black People was going to come up and sing, and La Raza had some people that were going to sing. The Red Guard watching in Chinatown were going to do a firework display in the sky. And, you know, everybody was going to participate, you know, and just, you know, show people that they were out to, you know, give people a good time, you think? Mm. The Angels were going to, you know, as they did, give away, you know, $5,000 to $1,000 worth of beer, you think, to everybody. Anybody who's around that bus, you know, at least 600 to 700 people got, you know, halfway decently high by that bus, you know, just giving away cold beer. There was ice and everything in the back of the bus. Okay. So, then the Filmways people saw the possibilities of this, and after we had constructed everything on Sears Point, in the stage, the tower, the whole lighting business, 27,000 pounds of lighting equipment was put up, by and say no, unless you fulfill our conditions. The conditions were more or less as follows. They wanted posted $250,000 in cash in the bank. They wanted the rights to all recordings and films made there. If there were no films being made there, if there were no recordings being made, they were going to make them, right, and distribute them. And they were extorting. They were just extorting people. The Stones as five individuals. So we had to walk away, you know? We just had to walk away. So we walked away from there, and this guy in Livermore heard about it, and he doesn't particularly like the people at Sears Point because it's, you know, a raceway that, you know, is his opposition. So he invited us there. So we had one day to construct this damn thing. So all the people that was, I mean, all the people of San Francisco that represent the people of San Francisco, right? Couldn't, you know, make it anymore. It was just too much for them. It was, you know, it was going to turn into a rock and roll show, free rock and roll show, man. And what it was intended to be was a, you know, a gigantic party celebrating, you know, anything.
Emmett, I think you're getting right to the basic difference between what this was and what everybody expected it to be. Was like Woodstock. They were putting Woodstock together for about 4 months, and they had about, what, at least a month or two on that site, right?
Right, right. That's what we needed. We needed 3 weeks in Golden Gate Park. That's all we needed. And 2 weeks, you know, we were already doing it. We had 9 weeks, you know. And people were working all those 9 weeks just constructing, you know, a theatrical experience for people when they came through the park. And what happened was that people kept stringing us out on the site for some reason in New York to keep control of the concert. They wouldn't trust us to do it. So New York controlled it. It was ridiculous. Anyway, let me get on with it. So, let me get to some points here that have been mentioned. Mick Jagger got in touch with me, and he was after Miami, and he said, listen, we're going to have to bring some armed security, you know, Fox or somebody, you know, some kind of security outfit in there, you know, but he won't let, Jagger said, I will not let a policeman step on, you know, the turf of the concert site. And it was already a free rock and roll show as far as I was concerned. So I said, well, I don't know what to do, Mick. And he said, well, Sam will be there tomorrow and speak about it. So Sam came and introduced him to, you know, and the Bear, Al Lee, had introduced him to Terry the Tramp. And then Sam Cutler came to speak to Pete, the vice president of the Frisco chapter of the Hell's Angels, and gave them $500 worth of beer in exchange for the security, and, you know, that kind of business. You've already heard that. That was no point.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what it was essentially to be was the people of San Francisco were to invite, you know, everybody to come and play who wanted to play. And the Rolling Stones, it just happened to be one of the bands that was coming to play. That's it. That's all it was. You know, that's all it, you know, should have been. That's not all it was. What it was a free rock and roll show.
Turned into a fiasco, man.
It turned into a Frankenstein.
Yeah.
KSAN was the true alternative radio station in the Bay Area, and there were very few of these in the whole country at that time. It had grown out of the seeds of what started the hip community that became the Haight-Ashbury. But the radio station had been there from the beginning, broadcasting the public service, playing the music that nobody else would play on the radio. It was pure in its heart, and of course it was inextricably involved with the musicians. And what the joy of this thing was not only could we play The Doors and The Airplane and The Dead and anybody that popped into our head or had a new album, but I could go in there on a sunny day, smoking a joint across the Golden Gate Bridge, put on Vivaldi's Spring Concerto, segue it to a bluegrass fiddler, and come out into something by Cream, you know, and it would work. And because we could do that, and other people didn't know how to do that, we were pretty cherished by the community at that time, and it was nice.
We got to leave it. It's, I think it's, there's no conclusions to be drawn except, this has been kind of a very weird experience to give this much attention to a rock and roll show. And I was doing a heavy number on it. We were committed to doing this show before it came down. It's brought out a couple of good things from it, from just doing the show. One is that it exposed bummers and maybe gave some idea, I think, maybe some insight into what a festival requires or what a big concert that involves a lot of people is all about and where people are at and why the whole scene has gone so sour. I think it's not so much, this is my feeling, where the community is at as it is where the people who put it together are at and what they've got to work with. And a combination of factors is what made Woodstock such a huge success, and the reverse combination of factors is what made Altamonte such a huge disaster. And I think it's kind of unanimous that it was a pretty big disaster.
Can we have some hash? Thank you. If the gentleman that are right in the front would like to sit down, we'll introduce the group to everyone. Would you like to sit down?
Here, the picture's great.
Yeah?
It's wild.
Nice. Right. Right, from right to left, your right to left, Mick Taylor, Charlie Watts, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, Phil Wyman of the Rolling Stones. Mick Taylor, Charlie Watts, Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, and Phil Wyman of the Rolling Stones. Could I ask, please, that people ask questions one at a time please, and we'll take as many questions as we can.
Listen, we can get our stills, we'll move back.